This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frannis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about sustainability and green ICT in CW 24 and 25. Frannis supports ICT enterprises in the form of delivering precise ICT market and pricing intelligence that analyst subscriptions and existing databases cannot provide. You can find more info in the description. So, you know, when we talk about digital transformation these days, there is this really persistent, almost comforting illusion of weightlessness.
Right, yeah. We use all these words like virtual or wireless or the cloud.
Exactly. We just kind of imagine our data floating up there in the sky somewhere.
Which is funny because the reality is that the cloud is incredibly heavy. I mean, it's constructed out of millions of tons of concrete and steel and just massive amounts of physical electricity and water.
It is. And today we're really looking at the sustainability and green ICT trends that are just lighting up LinkedIn right now. Because for anyone working in tech, the conversation has officially shifted.
Oh, completely. We are way past the era of, you know, those abstract corporate sustainability claims. We are deeply into the hard execution phase now.
Right. We're talking rigorous, uncompromising discipline around energy, water, infrastructure, and software efficiency.
So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're giving you a smart, totally no-fluff breakdown of the actual hard engineering choices and governance realities shaping the future of tech.
Because if you really want to understand how your digital supply chain impacts the physical world, you have to look at where code, hardware, and policy actually intersect.
Yeah, and let's actually start with the code, because the rapid adoption of Gen AI is just inflating IT budgets and emissions everywhere.
It really is. And what caught my eye recently is that the easiest, most immediate fixes for this massive energy spike, they aren't about building entirely new, futuristic data centers.
Right. The low-hanging fruit is actually right there at the data and software level. The way we format our inputs is just incredibly wasteful.
Yeah, Mark Butcher shared this really practical insight that perfectly illustrates this kind of invisible waste.
Oh, the Microsoft report test he did.
Exactly. So he wanted to test how much unnecessary energy we consume just by formatting data poorly for AI models. He took a 90-page Microsoft sustainability report, and he fed it into an AI in two different ways.
Just to measure the difference in computational cost, right?
Yeah. So first, he uploaded it as a plain text file, and then he uploaded it as the original PDF.
And the difference was massive, wasn't it?
Huge. The text version consumed about 56,000 tokens, but that original PDF consumed over 210,000 tokens.
Wow. So it's nearly four times as heavy for the exact same underlying information.
Exactly. And the reason why is fascinating. The AI model doesn't just, like, scan the hidden text layer of a PDF. It essentially renders a high-resolution picture of every single page.
Right. So you're forcing this incredibly complex neural network to process 90 pages of pixels and colors and formatting rather than just reading the words.
Which is so inefficient. And Mark pointed out the terrifying math behind this.
Yeah, because if you scale that invisible bloat up to a mid-sized organization, let's say 10,000 employees, right?
Right.
And they're each uploading just, say, two PDFs a day to an internal AI assistant. You are suddenly looking at 92 billion wasted tokens a year.
That is wild. I mean, that four times token bloat costs massively in computing power and energy drawn from the grid, not to mention actual operational dollars.
It's basically the digital equivalent of shipping a heavy wooden crate via next day air freight just to deliver a single postcard.
That is a perfect analogy. You're paying enormous fees for packaging you don't even need, but, you know, fixing our file formats only solves the input side of the equation.
Right. What about the AI models themselves? Uploading a clean text file is great, but we are still throwing massive amounts of compute at relatively simple problems.
Yeah, and Aidan Mir Mohammadi shared a brilliant metaphor for this. He's really pushing for what he calls lean agentic AI.
Oh, I loved his post. He basically noted you wouldn't deliver a pizza in a Ferrari.
Exactly. Yet that is exactly our default behavior in the tech industry right now. We use these massive, energy-hungry frontier models with trillions of parameters just to do basic text summarization.
Or simple coding tasks. It's just overkill. Ehsan Pourjavad actually expanded on this, arguing that the fundamental goal for AI engineering teams has to change.
Right, because it's no longer just about chasing the highest possible accuracy at literally any cost.
Because squeezing out that last 1% of accuracy usually requires doubling the energy cost. So Ehsan says the new goal is finding the Pareto frontier.
For those who might not know, in economics, the Pareto frontier is basically that absolute optimal point where you can't improve one variable without sacrificing another.
Right. And in AI, that means finding the specific lightweight model that perfectly balances business performance with actual energy efficiency.
And there's concrete proof that this discipline works.
Right.
I was reading this great breakdown from Gudenis Guzelay, who recently optimized a healthcare machine learning model.
Oh, yeah. Didn't her team decide to basically reject the default computational setting?
Yeah, they dug right into the math and switched the data format from float 64 down to float 32.
Which, for anyone outside of data science, just means reducing the level of mathematical precision the computer is forced to hold in its active memory.
Exactly. A float 64 requires the computer to process 64 bits of ones and zeros for every single decimal point.
And for a vast majority of applications, you simply do not need 64 bits of decimal precision to get an accurate result. 32 bits is plenty.
It really is. And by making that simple switch and pruning some unnecessary features from their dataset, her team reduced the model's energy consumption and its execution time by over 48%.
That's incredible. They cut the energy footprint nearly in half, with zero meaningful loss in predictive performance.
Yeah. Furthermore, where you choose to run those optimized models matters just as much as the code itself.
Oh, absolutely. Vil Nordberg highlighted this really well. He pointed out that if you self-host open-weight coding models on renewable infrastructure in Finland, it actually costs 15 to 20 times less than relying on endless API calls to US cloud providers.
15 to 20 times less. That's huge.
And in Finland, the waste heat generated by those servers is actually captured and used to warm local residential homes.
That's the dream, right? But here is the hard truth for anyone planning a digital transformation strategy. No matter how much you optimize your code or compress your PDFs, that data eventually has to be processed on physical silicon.
Right. And that hardware layer is currently slamming into a physical wall that no software update can magically fix.
Yeah. For years, engineers viewed electrical power as just like an optimization variable. Today, power is the primary immovable constraint.
Michael Friedman made an incredible observation about this regarding the hyperscalers, you know, the massive cloud providers running the internet.
What did he see?
He noted that they are actively denying server expansion requests from their own internal teams right now. And it's not because of a silicon chip shortage or a lack of warehouse space.
Let me guess. It's regional power limits.
Exactly. They are denying requests simply because of power constraints. The compute layer and the physical plant are now completely inseparable.
You literally cannot just drop a new server rack into a facility if the local grid physically cannot deliver the megawatts to turn it on.
You can't draw blood from a stone, and you can't draw gigawatts from a maxed out grid.
This physical constraint is forcing a massive, rapid shift in national policy, especially for regions that traditionally hosted these data hubs.
Like Ireland, for example. Stacey Keough shared a really interesting update on their infrastructure crisis.
Right, because Ireland is a major global hub for tech giants. Data centers there already consume around 20% of the nation's total electricity.
20% is staggering. So to protect the national grid from basically collapsing under the weight of AI, Ireland is instituting a strict bring your own power condition for new data center developments.
Bring your own power, BYOP. Essentially, the government is saying you cannot just plug a new gigawatt facility into the public utility grid anymore.
Right. If you want to build a data center there, you have to secure your own on-site power generation or fund brand new renewable energy contracts that add fresh power to the grid.
Instead of just siphoning off what the citizens need.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the friction isn't just happening at the macro national grid level. It's happening street by street.
Yeah, it's about the actual people living next door to these facilities.
Right. Mark P. highlighted this truly historic vote recently in Monterey Park, California. The local residents there voted 86% in favor of permanently banning any new data centers from being built in their city.
86%. I mean, that is not a narrow political margin. That is a resounding, unified rejection by an entire community.
Exactly. And the residents were citing severe concerns over rising local electricity bills, massive drawdowns on the municipal water supply, and air quality impacts.
Oh, because of the heavy backup diesel generators these facilities require to ensure uptime?
Yeah. People are finally realizing that data centers aren't just quiet, invisible office buildings storing emails. They are heavy, resource-intensive industrial facilities.
They really are. And to help communities navigate these massive zoning fights, Ashlyn Anderson built something incredibly clever using an AI coding tool called Claude Code.
Oh, I saw this. She created an interactive dashboard for a proposed data center site at a former coal plant in Pittsburgh, right?
Yes. And instead of a town hall just devolving into a yelling match, residents could actually look at this dashboard and input the exact specifications of the proposed data center.
So it democratizes the impact analysis.
Exactly. It allows residents to compare the data center's real footprint, its carbon emissions, its exact water use, the tax revenue generated, against seven alternative futures for that exact same plot of land.
That is so smart. They could compare the data center's impact side by side against building, say, a restored public park or a battery storage facility.
It completely changes the conversation from this highly polarized binary of build it or don't to helping communities make deeply informed comparative choices about their own backyards.
And one of the biggest reasons communities are pushing back so hard brings us to probably the most difficult environmental challenge in the tech sector right now: cooling.
Oh, yeah. AI computation runs unbelievably hot.
Racks of GPUs generate staggering amounts of thermal energy, and cooling those servers is a massive bottleneck. Will Arr actually posted this hilarious but scientifically sound takedown of the classic sci-fi dream of putting data centers in space.
Oh, I love this one. The idea always sounds so elegant, right? Space is freezing cold, so let's just orbit our servers and let the universe cool them.
Right, but Will points out what physicists call the vacuum paradox. Here on Earth, we use air or water to carry heat away from the servers through convection.
The fluid or gas moves over the hot metal and pulls the heat away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But space is a vacuum. There is no air or water to absorb that thermal energy.
So without a physical medium to transfer the heat into, the thermal energy just gets trapped right next to the hardware.
Space essentially acts like a giant thermos. So instead of freezing, an orbiting data center would just rapidly suffocate and melt in its own generated heat.
Which means we are stuck cooling our hardware right here on Earth.
And the engineering solutions for that are getting wild. Larissa Stetsenko posted about an incredible project where China launched a commercial underwater data center off the coast of Shanghai.
Wait, underwater? They literally sank the server modules into the ocean.
10 meters below the surface. Larissa described this approach as a classic TRIZ solution.
TORIZ, that's the Russian acronym for that highly structured engineering framework focused on inventive problem solving, right?
That's the one. And one of the core principles of TRIZ is that instead of fighting a contradiction with brute force, like using expensive mechanical chillers to fight the heat, you resolve it by changing the baseline environment itself.
You place the system where the cold already naturally exists.
Exactly. By dropping the data center into 15 degrees Celsius seawater, they achieve near perfect passive energy efficiency.
Okay, it sounds brilliant on a spreadsheet, but you really have to look at the physical reality. Doesn't that just boil the ocean locally?
Yeah, that's the catch. All of that concentrated thermal energy has to go somewhere into the surrounding marine ecosystem.
And environmentalists are already sounding the alarm about the potential for massive marine ecological dead zones forming around these submerged facilities.
because of the constant localized heat plumes disrupting the water temperature.
Right. But then again, terrestrial cooling has its own dark side that corporate reports rarely mention. We constantly hear the buzzword zero water cooling, and it sounds so perfectly eco-friendly to a consumer.
It does. But Mashika Allgood posted a really stark warning about what is actually running through those closed-loop pipes.
Yeah, these zero water systems often rely on hundreds of thousands of gallons of highly toxic chemical coolants. We're talking industrial antifreeze, motor oils, and forever chemicals.
Wow. So if there is a catastrophic leak at one of these facilities, the damage to the local soil and municipal water tables could just devastate a community for decades.
Exactly. We are essentially trading the risk of municipal water consumption for the risk of a toxic chemical disaster.
It is a terrifying trade-off. But the discipline creating this massive demand data science is also proving to be our sharpest tool for mitigating it.
How so?
Well, Kirk Mettler highlighted how reinforcement learning agents are being deployed to analyze sensor data inside hyperscale facilities.
Oh, like AI managing the building's climate control.
Yeah. A reinforcement learning agent analyzes thousands of temperature and airflow sensors simultaneously, constantly making micro adjustments to fan speeds and valve pressures in real time.
So by letting the software teach the building how to cool itself dynamically, what kind of savings are they seeing?
They're cutting cooling energy by 30 to 40%.
That is massive. And on the hardware manufacturing side, Curtis Woody highlighted a company called XNRGY that has developed specific zero water loss chillers designed to actively avoid those environmental spill risks while still maintaining efficiency.
That's a huge step forward. Luis Timodio also shared a highly impressive metric, noting that AWS achieved a global water efficiency average of 0.12 liters per kilowatt hour through smarter operations.
But, you know, this brings us to a massive overarching problem with everything we've discussed today. AWS claims 0.12 liters, XNRGY claims zero water loss, various cloud providers claim 100% renewable energy.
Right. How do you actually verify who is telling the truth?
Exactly. The digital supply chain is incredibly opaque. Sean O'Connell shared a really painful, real-world lesson about this.
Oh, with his website hosting?
Yeah. For years, Sean proudly used a verified green hosting provider for his website. He even displayed a green credential badge right on his homepage.
And let me guess, that boutique hosting provider was inevitably acquired by a massive corporate giant.
Yep. And the new parent company quietly ignored all the verification requests from the Green Web Foundation. So Sean lost his green credentials without ever touching a single line of his own code.
Because his upstream supplier changed their internal policies, his own sustainability claims suddenly became false.
It just proves that a company's sustainability is only as strong as its weakest vendor. You have to constantly audit your digital supply chain.
And when you actually perform those audits, they reveal some pretty surprising things about the platforms we trust the most. Julie Schiller posted the results of a technical sustainability audit she performed on LinkedIn's own website.
Oh, the irony. The very platform where all these corporate leaders are posting their ESG commitments. What did she find?
Well, she found that 61.6% of every page load was just heavy JavaScript.
And heavy JavaScript is a massive carbon problem because it offloads the computational burden onto the user, right?
Exactly. The platform server isn't doing the heavy lifting. The user's local smartphone or laptop browser has to download, parse, and execute all that bloated code.
Which drains billions of device batteries globally, pushing the energy costs straight onto the local power grids of the users.
Yep. Schiller also noted that the main content took 8.2 seconds to appear. But crucially, she found their green hosting status was completely unverified.
Wait, really? But they run on Microsoft Azure, which has very public renewable energy commitments.
They do. But the infrastructure itself wasn't independently verified by the Green Web Foundation. It perfectly highlights how our massive digital infrastructure mostly runs completely unexamined in the background.
Which is exactly why the international community is finally stepping in to force visibility. We saw several posts discussing how Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, alongside advocates like Mathieu Francois, are pushing for a major AI environmental transparency initiative at the UN.
That is so needed, because Mathieu Francois makes a crucial point. Right now, every single government framework assumes we can actually measure and compare the environmental impacts of different AI models.
But the truth is, we can't. We just do not have interoperable standards.
So the UN initiative is pushing to make measurement mandatory, globally standardized, and entirely independent of the tech provider's own self-disclosure.
Because if you let the tech companies mark their own homework, you are never going to get the full, unvarnished picture of the environmental costs.
We absolutely need independent metrics that travel across borders, just like the cloud does.
And, you know, if we connect all of these pieces, the software bloat, the hardware constraints, the cooling chemicals, the lack of transparency, there is a really profound thought from Wilco Burggraf that kind of encapsulates this entire deep dive.
What was his take?
Well, Wilco shared this deeply personal story about growing up in the 1980s in the Netherlands. His family literally lived inside the grounds of a highly polluting factory where his dad worked as a guard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. He remembers the dust settling on the fresh laundry, the fish dying in the local canal from illegal chemical dumping, the lingering metallic smell in the air, and the severe asthma his family suffered as a result.
And didn't that factory eventually relocate?
It did. In the 2000s, it packed up and moved to China. But Wilco noted something vital. We constantly distance ourselves from the effects of our actions, but the impact remains.
The factory moved, but the environmental damage to the canal and the health impacts on his family were already done.
Exactly. And today, Wilco is a solution architect focusing specifically on sustainable digital operations. He argues that our current obsession with just measuring AI tokens and counting carbon credits is way too narrow.
So what does he say true digital sustainability actually looks like?
He says it isn't just about tweaking a sorting algorithm's energy use in isolation or buying enough solar credits to offset a massive data center. It is about fundamentally reducing overall organizational waste.
Like looking at avoided work or reducing legacy technical debt.
Right. Killing inefficient software containers and stopping pointless duplicated processes entirely. If you make a software system highly energy efficient, but it is fundamentally building useless things, it is not sustainable.
Wilco's core question for you, the listener, is this. Is your tech actually solving a real necessary problem, or are you just efficiently maintaining waste?
That is the ultimate question.
And it brings us right back to that illusion of weightlessness we started with. Because it's digital, we assume it leaves no permanent mark. But we have to ask ourselves a harder question about the legacy of this infrastructure.
Yeah, just as Wilco's physical factory left a permanent environmental scar on his hometown.
What happens 50 years from now if the current AI bubble shifts or the underlying technology fundamentally changes? Are we currently building the digital rust belt of the 21st century?
I mean, we are pouring millions of tons of concrete, permanently altering local water tables and rewiring national electrical grids for these massive data centers.
If the algorithms move on, the physical footprint of our digital obsession will still be sitting right there in someone's backyard. The weight is very real, and the impact remains. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on cloud, digital products and services, artificial intelligence, and ICT and tech insights, health tech, defense tech. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive, and don't forget to subscribe.